British Public Radio. Food and drink.
Howdy, partners, and welcome to the UK Wine Show. My name's Chris Scott, and on this week's show, we're back talking with Elizabeth Rice about California's most productive wine region. It's not Napa Valley. Napa Valley's only responsible for 4%. We're talking about California's Central Valley. Never heard of it? Not many people have. We're going to find out all about the Central Valley, Lodi, old vines and Fandals, as well as a bit about the Sierra foothills. Anyway, let's crack on with the show. Next up is the news with Jane.
Well, first up this week, wine importer Ehrmann's is launching the world's first ever Lebanese fair trade wine in the UK. Just in time for Fair Trade Fortnight, which is from February the 25th to March the 10th. The wine is made by a cooperative called Coto Helipolis, which has 220 members and 240 hectares of vineyards. The land was formerly home to illegal cannabis plantations, which were destroyed following Lebanese government orders in 1993. But this left farmers out of pocket and without livelihoods. So a French department, Loise, stepped in and assisted the local farmers in planting vines. And all the funds generated by the Fairtrade premium will go towards the conservation of natural resources, including water through the cultivation of non-irrigated crops. The wine, Coteau Le Cèdre du Laban, is a blend of Syrah, Cabernet Sauvignon, Tempranillo and Caladoc and will retail at £13.99. In the UK, sales of fair trade wine have grown by 12% in value and 6% in volume in the last year, and there are now over 250 fair trade wines certified in the UK.
As Jane said, fair trade will start on the 25th of February, and many of the fair trade wines in the UK come from South Africa. And as we know from a couple of weeks ago, there's a lot of strife in the South African wine industry about people getting fair wages. So the question is, should we be buying South African wines? And more importantly, should we be buying South African fair trade wines? And I think the answer is yes, we should. Particularly this week, if you have been buying a bit of South African wine through all the strifes about underpay and all this sort of stuff, then perhaps reach for a bottle of fair trade Pinotage or Chenin Blanc. Oh, actually, I prefer the Chenin Blanc to Pinotage and enjoy that for a change. What's the next story, Jane?
Well, wine producers in the United States have started selling their wines on Facebook via the Facebook gift store. The new gifts section is available on the Facebook app for iPhones and Android phones, and with each wine sold, Facebook, the winery and Ship Compliance all get a percentage of the sale. But the share that each receives will not be publicly disclosed. Among the wines available are Robert Mondavi, Claude Dubois and Wild Horse, all of which are owned by drinks giant Constellation. A much smaller winery, Blackbird Vineyards, in Napa Valley, say they've been selling 3 to 4 orders a day, with each order ranging from 1 to 3 bottles. Once an order's placed, the recipient is sent an email message. If they accept the gift and share their postal address with Facebook, the wine will arrive at their door several days later.
Facebook is such an international phenomenon, and social networking can sell wines. Just think about Naked Wines over here. But do we want Facebook to be another sales channel? I tend to prefer to shop at shops and shops online, and I prefer to do social media places in social media places, and I don't like the idea of the two being crossed over. That said, since Facebook plays fast and loose with our privacy, at least they know a lot about us and what we like, or at least they're happy to sell all the information about us to anybody who wants it. What's the last story, Jane?
Well, finally this week, the volume of champagne shipped in 2012 was 14 million bottles lower than 2011, thanks to a slump in Christmas trade in November and December, but driven largely by a decline in champagne sales in France itself. The Comité Interprofessionnel du Vin du Champagne, or the CIVC, reported total shipments of 308.8 million, down 4.4%. And in the French market, a decline of 5.6%, or 10 million bottles, in the French market, which accounts for 55.5% of global shipments. Volume sales in the European Union were also down by 7.1%. But it's not all doom and gloom. By value, ex-cellar sales were stable at 4.37 billion euros and described as very satisfactory. In markets outside the EU, shipments were up by 1.9 million bottles or 3.2%. There was growth in key markets such as Japan and Australia, and soaring demand in emerging markets, including China, Russia, Mexico and Nigeria. The CIVC said the volume decline was expected because of the hard economic climate and highlighted an increase in average per bottle prices, which reinforced the strategy of creation of value and the development of the champagne prestige. That's it from me this week. But don't forget to check these stories out at our website 3050.co.uk.
Cheers, Jane. In tastings, I often show people a fairly decent champagne and we compare it to a fairly decent Prosecco. And about half of the audience actually prefer Prosecco over champagne. They taste quite differently after all. And many people enjoy a good bottle of fizz. But acidity and autolysis are not everybody's cup of tea. And in the UK, where people have the opportunity to try different styles of fizzes from around the world, they're realising there's a huge diversity outside of the champagne region. Anyway, let's move on with the show, and we're going to move straight into the interview. As I said at the top of the show, we're going to be interviewing Elizabeth Rice. Elizabeth Rice is the European Regional Manager for Delicato, one of California's larger producers. They are a family vineyard, and she is from the Central Coast. But we're going to be talking to her about Central Valley, which is a big wine-producing region in California. Let's find out about Central Coast, Zinfandel, and the Sierra Foothills. A lot of the wines I've seen from Delicato have been located in Lodi.
Yes.
Which I think is technically part of the Central Valley.
Technically, yeah. No, it is, because it is in that same band that goes in the middle of California, which is classified as the Central Valley. Typically, we would say Lodi is the North Central Valley because it does have a very different climate than what the rest of the Central Valley has.
Because we're going to talk a bit about Central Valley today, but let's start off with the main part of the valley, because that's my experience or my understanding of Central Valley, is that it's a great area for cheap glugging wines.
Yeah, I mean, it's inland, so it doesn't get any ocean influence in the southern part of the Central Valley, which is the San Joaquin County area. And so you get a lot of, you know, you get sun, you get warmth, it's very arid. So yeah, inexpensive, fruity, straightforward style of wines, you know, the larger percentage of the California production comes from that region.
Oh, really? In terms of percentages, you said larger percentage.
Larger, yeah, I'm trying to remember what the number was. I believe it's around about 40% or so of the California production comes from the Central Valley. So
really, based on the noise in the press, you'd think it all comes from Napa.
Yeah, Napa only does 4%.
Really? that's such a telling statement, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. But, you know, I mean, the Central Valley, it's an important area to California because it does produce our entry-level wines. You know, it produces the wines that are cheap and cheerful that, you know, can be accessible. Accessible to the average consumer.
Okay. And I read somewhere that Central Valley is one of the hottest places in the world to grow grapes.
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure. It is hot, though, especially down the southern part of it. Like I said, you kind of get into some deserty style areas where it is quite warm.
It feeds into a desert, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, you got Death Valley too far from there.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah. Death Valley famous because it's, what, one of the driest places in the world?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think there's a place in Chile, the Atacama Desert, is a wee bit drier, but that's just because of the altitude, whereas Death Valley, it's such a warm, hospitable name, isn't it?
I know, it makes you want to go there, huh? Actually, Death Valley is really cool, though.
Is it cool as in cold?
No, cool as in, like, really neat to go see. You know, there's like it is very, you know, vast and arid, but they have a lot of neat kind of energy things that happen there, like that move rocks by itself and a lot of energy forces. So, yeah, it's an interesting experience.
So you get a lot, maybe some biodynamic guys looking to get out there, perhaps.
A little too hot for that.
Okay, interesting. So you're saying Central Valley famous for, well, not famous really, but producing a lot of 40% of California wines or thereabouts. What sort of grapes do you grow out that ways?
Oh, they grow a lot of different grapes. I mean, you know, they have everything that ranges from like Ruby Cabernet to Cabernet Sauvignon to Merlot, you know, Chardonnay. So, I mean, there's a lot of different varietals being grown out in the south of the Central Valley.
What about Petit Serra? Is that there?
That's also, yeah, that's being done out there too. Yeah. But
and Ruby Cabernet, that was actually a great variety developed in California, wasn't it, for the climate? So was it sort of developed for Central Valley, I presume?
Yeah, exactly. It was developed to produce, you know, a a grape that made a lot of wine, really, you know, and that was, you know, fruitful and developed well in hotter climates, that would then be able to make wine out of, a quaffable, smooth, easy drinking style wine. And exactly what it is.
What about Zinni? That must be made there. Zinfandel is California's grape variety.
What we're known for, it's our specialty, is Zinfandel. But you know, there is Zinfandel in the Central Valley, you know, definitely. But because it's only heat, you know, you just get a really straightforward, simple style Zinfandel, which, you know, is fine if you're just looking for some quick quaffing wine. But as you go north into the Central Valley, then you start running into the Lodi area. And Lodi is totally different than the rest of the Central Valley. What Lodi is known for is Old Vine Zinfandel.
Yeah, because we actually taste in our tastings your entry-level Zinfandel called Delicato Old Vine Zinfandel. Mm-hmm. Always a bit dodgy about someone saying Old Vine, because Old Vine can mean anything from 50 years to 5.
Yeah.
There's no real meaning to it. Although I think you guys are a bit, you made a statement about a year or two ago saying that, you know, your old vines are genuinely old vine.
Yeah, well, I mean, the family settled in Lodi in, you know, the 1910s area, and then they established the winery in the 1920s. And it was then that they started building relationships with the other families who owned vineyards and were growers and built contracts, which some were done by a handshake. And those contracts today, 3 generations later, are still being honored. So we, as the Delicato family, actually controls about 55% of the Old Vine Zinfandel in Lodi. And we, as a family, we consider Old Vine to be anything over 35 years old.
Yeah.
So,
which is a fair length.
Yeah, it is old. I mean, like you said, there is no legal regulation for Old Vine. So it can be loosely used by some wineries. So, you know, but we're very adamant that we know Old Vine is 35 and older. And then in our wines, we'll even tell you what age range we're using.
Okay.
Like in the Delicato, it's 35 to 70 year old vines. In Gnarly Head, it's 35 to 85. And in Brazen, it's 40 to 100 year old vines.
Okay. Let's just focus back in on Lodi. You're saying it's a wee bit cooler there. What's driving that?
Well, what happens in Lodi is inland. It's about an hour east of Napa Valley, east of San Francisco.
Yeah, so you'd think, gosh, that must be getting Death Valley again.
Yeah, but it's actually not. Because it's east and about San Francisco, you do get warm days. But these winds come off the ocean through the Bay Area, and they follow these rivers called the Delta. And then the winds follow the Delta, and the winds stop in Lodi. So every day. So Lodi actually is quite breezy, which really cools it down. So you have warm days, but then your nights cool down quite drastically because of those winds from the Bay Area.
And is there, like, you talked about the Delta. I've never really got my head around what that is, but I understand there's a break in the hills.
Yeah, there's no hills there to stop it. So it's just open, and the Delta rivers just come right through, and they stop in Lodi. And so the winds just follow that opening because there's no mountains to stop it. Except for when it gets to Lodi, the Sierra foothills now stop the wind, because Lodi is right down on the base of the Sierra foothill mountains. So that's why the winds come in Lodi and cool it down, because it's stopping there. We also get coolness off the Sierra foothill mountains. So we have coolness coming two ways into Lodi. So out of all the grape growing regions in California, Lodi has the widest temperature fluctuation. Also, so you get the hottest days and the coolest nights in Lodi compared to any other region.
Okay, so that should be good for acidity.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why Zinfandel does so lovely there. And Viognier is a star white varietal in that area, because those varietals like, you know, warmth. They need sun to develop the fruit, but they need the coolness to help develop their acidities.
Yeah, because if you're not careful, Viogniers can get a bit flabby.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that makes sense. And how long has Lodi been making wines? You said 100 years or so?
Yeah, no, it started in the 1850s when Lodi started making wine. Historically, they would sell their grapes to places like Napa and Sonoma, because Napa and Sonoma are legally allowed to blend up to 15% from any other region in California and still label it Napa and Sonoma.
Yep.
They recognized Lodi's quality early on, and would buy Lodi fruit and put it in their own. And then, you know, Lodi'd make their own wine, but they'd really just sell it there. Or, you know, Lodi is also a very farming area. It's not ritzy glitzy like Napa. You find it's not a lot of fancy tasting rooms. It's more down to earth farmers. And they also grow a lot of other things. You know, you'll find cherry trees and walnut trees and almonds, and you have a lot of different produce being grown in the Lodi, because it's got such a great climate.
Oh, okay. And it was quite interesting. We were talking before the show. You were saying, you know, should we do a
are saying, well, let's do something on Central Valley. Mm-hmm. And you're saying, well, maybe we shouldn't include Lodi in Central Valley. But you're saying it's technically part of Central Valley, but you feel it's almost different.
Yeah, I mean, technically, you know, geographically, it's considered to be part of Central Valley. But when you look at it weather-wise and climate-wise, it's totally different than Central Valley. So geographically, yes. Climate-wise, no.
And wine quality as well.
Yeah,
because Lodi's trying to make good quality wines, whereas we're saying earlier, Central Valley's more about volume wines.
Exactly. And now, you know, like I said, Lodi's making wine since the 1850s, but now Lodi has realized that, you know, we have wonderful grapes that are making really top-notch wine. So now you're starting to see more promotions for Lodi, more wines labeling themselves as Lodi, and also focusing on, you know, exporting the wines and building a name around the region and becoming known as the Zinfandel region of California.
Oh, really?
Yeah, especially when you got such amazing, I mean, they have fields of these old vine Zinfandel vines, and these vines are really special because there's no trellis system on them, so they grow them like bushes.
Oh, harvesting must be tricky.
Yeah, all hand-picked. You can't run a machine harvester through that. You tear limbs off. So we call them head-trained vines because the canes grow right out of the head. And, you know, those vines, the older they get, the thicker they get, the more twisted and gnarled they get, and the less fruit they produce. So then the less fruit they produce, the more complexity, the more concentration, you know, those grapes get, which then goes into the wine. And so that's why in Lodi, you typically get really rich, jammy, dark fruits in your Zinfandels. But then you'll get this real nice peppery spice in the back of the throat.
I've noticed that, well, the wines I've had anyway, they don't seem to have maybe the tannin structure for the old vine Zinnies that I've had. Is that because I've just not tasted the right ones? Or?
No, Zinfandel usually doesn't get a good tannin structure. You know, they're not a real tannic wine. It's not as thick-skinned as Cabernet Sauvignon, so you don't get all that dry mouth kind of character. So Zinfandels typically also are not meant for aging.
Yep.
You know, you should drink your Zinfandels young.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have that tannin structure, and they also don't have a high acidity structure either. So you don't age Zinfandels; you drink them.
Okay. Is that maybe why Zinfandel is quite popular in California? Is that they are quite easy to get into? You don't, you know, some people really don't like bitterness and the tannins, and if you don't like bitterness, then you don't really want to be drinking Cabernet Sauvignon wines as a general rule. And that's about a third of the population. So all of a sudden, you've got this wine that. It's probably quite suitable for everybody, really.
Oh, it is. Well, but Zinfandel is made in all kinds of different styles, so you have to really be aware kind of how the winery produces their Zinfandel. I mean, Zinfandel ranges from, as a lot of people have probably seen, the white Zinfandel, the rosés, which are very sweet, you know, just focused on being refreshing and straightforward, summery style wine. Going into like a lighter style red Zin, then a medium bodied red Zin, and then it goes up to these big, huge monster red Zins where they can be like 16-17% alcohol and still considered a dry red wine, you know, and those are just like full on huge wines in the mouth. So it does depend on the producer of the Zinfandel and what they're after. And they also do late harvest Zinfandels, and you'll have dessert Zinfandel wines.
Oh, really?
So, and those are usually very big and intense on the palate. So the average consumer who drinks white Zinfandel or lightly colored red Zinfandels not appreciate, you know, the late harvest dessert Zins or the big, you know, big monster.
How did you guys feel about Arnold Schwarzenegger trying to make Zinfandel the wine grape variety of California?
Yeah, no, I mean, I thought it was a good idea personally. You know, September was California month, California wine month, and Zinfandel, was focused on being the grape of California. And I thought it was a smart move because most countries have their star signature varietal, you know, Sauvignon Blanc for New Zealand and Malbec for Argentina and Shiraz for Australia. So, I mean, it was only natural that California is known for Zinfandel.
But all the expensive wines are Cabernet Sauvignon dominated. So, I suppose Zinfandel's nice because it's not an indigenous grape, obviously, but
no, I mean, to tell you a little history of Zin's always kind of fun because people, always think Zinfandel originated from Italy because it's also known as Primitivo in Italy. But the last research that I've read, it actually originates from Croatia.
Yeah. Can you pronounce the name?
I butcher it. But it's,
give it a go.
It's called a Kirjanek Kestelanski.
That's pretty good going.
Okay.
I mean, I can't even pronounce it. There's too many things in there. I've got no idea what it is. So.
Yeah. I say it
confident
phonetically.
Anyway when you said it.
I've been practicing, but I say it phonetically. I look at it and say, okay, Kirja Nat Kesta Lonski. Perfect. I'm sure someone from Croatia is laughing right now.
Okay. So Zinfandel really is the grape of Lodi.
Yeah.
How big is it in the main part of Central Valley, the warmer part?
No, there's still quite a bit of Zinfandel planted down there, particularly Zinfandel for the white Zinfandel, for the rosés. That's where a lot of the white Zin rosés come from, is the Central Valley, because it gets hot and it gets that nice, you know, sugar, and then they can create, you know, real sweet style rosés that are straightforward. So that's really what the Central Valley Zins are for, is for the white Zins.
And let's get back up near Lodi. Sierra Foothills, I don't really consider as part of California. I presume it must be, but...
Mm-hmm. But it's on the border of Nevada, so you got, you know, it crosses over when you get to Tahoe into Nevada area. So, but it is still California, the Sierra Foothills.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of wines from Sierra Foothills. They're still part of the Central Valley.
You know, it's another valley, actually. They don't consider Sierra Foothills part of the Central Valley because it's actually on the east side of California, and it's not a valley anymore. Now you're mountain ranges, so it's known just as the Sierra Foothills. There's a lot of different grape growing regions there. They're growing and becoming more recognized. But most of them right now are a lot of small family owned and operated wineries. You know, like Amador County is probably one of the more famous regions in that area. But they're also known for their Zinfandels there, more mountainous Zinfandels. Yep. So you do get, you know, different structure and character than you would in Lodi. And
people have talked about these mountain wines. And I was talking to Mark from Robert Madavi earlier, and he was saying, you know, mountain wines are more fruity or something along those lines. What is mountain wines? You know, I've heard of mountain people from America. You know, dun, 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 dun. But it's sort of a bit more like...
And they have those in the Sierra Foothills too. Yeah, they still mine out there, actually. So there's miner villages where you have men who are still going in caves mining. And yeah, really? I've been to some interesting bars in that area. But, you know, the mountain wines, you know, it's altitude wines. They're higher up, so they're cooler. You know, you get a lot more coolness. So it creates, you know, real rich style fruits, you know, very velvety, dark, kind of rich fruits. You know, Lodi, because it gets warm, you get more jammy fruit. But up in the Sierra Foothills, you get more velvety style fruit.
Oh, okay. So Sierra Foothills, cooler region. I suppose cooler. That's because you got more coolness coming from the hills. Rolling down.
And in the higher altitude, you get coolness. I mean, you know, it snows there in the winter, and, you know, it's much cooler than the Lodi region.
Do you still get the sea breezes coming in?
No, it doesn't really go up to the Sierra Foothills. The sea breezes stop in Lodi.
Okay.
The interesting thing with Sierra Foothills, though, is they actually have the oldest Zinfandel vines. I would almost say probably even the world, but definitely in California. The exact age, I know it's in around 130 some odd years old.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Have you tried those wines?
I've not. No, there's not that many vines of it left, and they're not going to pull them out because they want to, you know, keep that history and heritage.
Yeah, for sure. I bet they don't produce many grapes.
No, they don't. But like even in Lodi, though, there's vineyards there that are over 100 years old now, and they're still keeping them going and still producing wine because it's just so special.
Central Valley is a big wine-producing region, producing 40% of California's wines. If you've never heard about it before, it's a bit like Riverina in Australia. You may have heard of wines from southeastern Australia and never known where they come from. Most of them, if they're marked southeastern Australia, come from the hot inland areas of Riverina and Riverlands. And the reason they're grown there is because the heat means it's easy to ripen large crops, which makes for lovely, cheap, quaffing wines. We're going to finish the show up this week with a quote, and this week's quote is from Scott Lynch from the book Lies of Loch Lamara. If reassurance could dull pain, nobody would ever go to the trouble of pressing grapes. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a British Public Radio presentation in association with the wine tasting company 3050. For more, go to 3050.co.uk.